Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Life Success Radio. Today is Wednesday, December 6, 2017. I am Dr. Haleem Mustafa, your host and moderator. I am also known as Haleem the Dream Builder, Dr. Self-Esteem. Today is our last show as a featured show on Booker T. Washington Speaks. We have thoroughly enjoyed sponsorship of Reality Books, which is a publisher of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution book, which I really recommend to everyone to really tune into it, learn about not only the past but the present and the future in terms of a blueprint for America's success. Book has a lot of profound quotes and leadership representation historically that we have in one book. We can get all the lessons of some of the most prolific African American leaders in this country's history. So Reality Books have taken Life Success Radio to the edge of the ozone, and now we are ready and poised to break the gravitational pull as we soar beyond limitations in the vast regions of opportunity that is now within our reach as an independent Life Success Radio. We're very appreciative of our sponsor, the great-grandson of the senior great-grandson of Dr. Booker T. Washington. And so I just want to say, hold a second. Mr. Art Fuller, are you online today? Are you online right now? Mr. Fuller? Okay, wonderful. Well, we're expecting a guest here, Mr. Fuller. He'll be on shortly here. I just spoke to him about maybe 10 minutes ago. But the point is that Life Success Radio is actually in the precipice of really becoming a phenomenal enterprise, and we owe it to the senior great grandson, Dr. Booker T. Washington, the professor, as I call him, and he is a professor of history, but he is actually an extraordinary human being that understands business and marketing and a whole lot of other things, and including leadership and what it takes to develop in terms of what can set them on a life journey. People who would reflect the kind of seriousness that his great grandfather, Dr. Booker T. Washington, represented. Because these young people, they need this kind of leadership, and certainly we're going to utilize everything we have through this experience to bring about that reality, God willing. Now, before we begin, I'd like to open in prayer, because this is what we do as a part of. As we build this legacy. So here goes the prayer in Arabic and then English. I'll say, Ayudu bilahim min ashoto nirajim. Bismillahir Rahman nirrahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Ar-Rahman nirrahim. Maliki Yawmiddin, إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين آمين. Now I'll say in English what I expressed in Arabic. In English it reads, or it says, I seek refuge with God Allah from the curse of the devil Satan. With the name of God Allah, most gracious, most merciful, master of the day of judgment. Thee alone do we worship, and thy aid do we seek. Show us the straight way, the way on those whom thou hast bestowed thy grace. Portion is not wrath, and who go not astray in their service and duty to you, Almighty God. Amen. Amen. Now, I want to say that particular prayer was said by Kunta Kinte. If you remember Roots movie, Kunta Kinte was a Muslim, and that's where they kidnapped him and brought him from Africa, from the Mandinka tribe. And so that's a historical fact, and I just like to make that point here. Now, I'm waiting for my guest, so in the meantime, until I hear from him, I'm going to continue on a monologue here and just kind of talk some things about what's going on here. With our new sponsorship as an independent now, Life Success Radio, we actually have a call-in number that we'll be marketing on all kind of different methods. And the call-in number is simply 929-477-3556. I'll repeat that call-in number, 929-477-3556. Now, I will be setting up the shows beginning this tomorrow. And so we'll be continuing with the show cycle of Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday since we began this. We don't want to lose the momentum. Now, our sponsors for this particular show that's now independent now, our sponsors will be UBCN 314 LLC, which is Urban Business Consulting Network. And we also have a sponsor, Alms Yes Foundation. And Alms is like charity. And YES is an acronym for Youth and Young Adults Education and Entrepreneurship Scholarship and Success Foundation. And we're targeted to young people in a very profound way. And I want to say to you is that the mission statement for the organization is very important. The Alms YES Foundation will provide fundraising, support program services, seminars, workshops for inner city student leadership and entrepreneurship that will impact K-12 students and young adults attending historic black colleges and universities. That's what the foundation will be committed to as one aspect, but also we'll be doing fundraising using the telethon that we're actually planning for 2019, January 5th, 6th, and 7th. That'll be a Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And this day is in honor to Dr. George Washington Carver, the great creative scientist from Tuskegee University that was recruited by Dr. Booker T. Washington. And as you may know about Dr. Carver, he is one of the greatest scientists on the planet in terms of creative science and taking agriculture to a new level and creating gasoline and other things from peanut and soybean and other legumes or nuts. And so in any event, that January 5th day is going to be a telethon to generate $1 billion over a 20-year period beginning 2019 and ending 2039, which would be $50 million a year. And we hope that you'll be able to support us in some regards because we're here to help the children of America. Now, I'm going to ask, is my guest, Mr. Fuller, on yet, or should I just continue? If I don't hear his voice, I'm going to continue. So anyway, here we go. Our sponsors include eGalaxy, Professional Speakers Institute, and that's be something like, you know, I think you might have saw TED Talk. So in comparison to TED Talks, eGalaxy Professional Speakers Institute will have some of the most dynamic speakers that this planet now are yielding. And we are, as speakers, we are actually coming from the inspirational message as transitional people who would be able to give concepts and reasoning, logic, and direction to help young people specifically to understand how to maintain a quality of life. Because the problems today is that young people have no body paying attention at that level. On a positive note, we have a lot of finger pointing and blame. So we're going to change that with the Professional Speakers Institute that eGalaxy Professional Speakers Institute will represent. And also the last one we have sponsorship will be Modern Day Achievers, a student leadership development catalyst. Under that note, the Modern Day Achievers has a campaign. Mr. Fuller, is that you online there?
Yes, sir. I'm online.
Okay, excellent. Give me a moment. I'm just winding up here, and then I'll talk to you directly. Okay.
That'll be fine. Yeah.
Excellent. Just put your phone on mute if there's any noise in the background, and if not, keep an open line. Okay. So as I was saying here, I'm glad we have Mr. Fuller online. And I'm winding down what I was saying, that our sponsors for Life Success Radio, our last sponsor, which I mentioned, Modern Day Achievers, which is a student leadership development catalyst, leading a campaign to establish. Now, this is what we're going to do. We're going to establish Booker T. Washington Industrial Career Pathway Centers of America. We're going to do this for the purpose of helping develop the industrial careers again and utilizing the practical common sense that Dr. Booker T. Washington represented. So now tonight, bring the point I really want to say. We are in our inaugural departure from Booker T. Washington Speaks. And I'm going to say that Mr. Fuller, who's our guest tonight, he was actually one of the top three that started us off here in Texas. So this is a closure to a chapter that's opening another big book. And so the topic for tonight, as we have, is Blessed to be Blessed. That's the theme. And we, Mr. Art Fuller will talk on what is going to be the topic of solutions to psychological dependency and mental control of today's slave masters who use social media and religion to control the lives of Black folks in America. Now, that's a specific. So, in any event, Mr. Fuller, I know you're a very qualified man, and you have a lot of experience. So, I don't want to do you any injustice. I'd like you to just kind of introduce yourself and talk to the level that you want to share with us as it pertains to the topic theme or whatever you want to say. The mic is yours. I'm gonna put my phone on mute and listen. Okay.
All right. Hello, I'm Arthur Fuller. And it is my pleasure to talk to you tonight. A little bit of background is that I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, and I would have to get information to you about how an experience is that I had during that time. But I can tell you this, that I had five brothers and one sister. And we grew up, in fact, we lived together in one room until I was 23 years old, to give you an idea about how I came up with that, but had a mom who was a mom, and that made a difference. After some degree of study, I graduated from Miles College. After graduating from Miles College, I was recruited and brought to do graduate study at the Courant Institute of Mathematical Study at New York University as a graduate fellow, which meant that I worked with, did chores kind of thing for the professors and so forth there. And to give you some idea about what happened there is that it's my understanding that the second or third computer installation in the country or in the world, literally, was done at that university. And my first project at that school, or the project that I did there, was to validate the accuracy of that computer with a desktop calculator. That was about a 4 to 4.5 month project. But all of those things are going, since that time, I have been a college professor. And during all of that time, started discovering the American free enterprise system and grew to the point of recognizing that who was free and who was not. And, of course, a lot of our talk from day to day is that whole idea about freedom. But on some recent things I thought about is ask the question, in America, in this American free enterprise system, who is free? And this will get to what Doc has talked about before. But now think about it for a minute. Who is free? The people who are free are the ones who do not have to actually put in labor, et cetera, in order to have the benefits of the system. That's what's called free. And in our economy, we could look at it in a very interesting way. Business owners, not necessarily business themselves, are free because their income comes through the business, okay, to them. Who else is free? The government is free because every penny that the government gets comes from the labor of the people who are who have positions and jobs, et cetera, et cetera. And when they distribute that money back, they claim, you know, that they're doing great things, but the thing is they're really distributing your money, the money of people who have jobs. And the people in this system who are not free are really what I call citizens, and those are people who work and have not really come to the realization that their working effort funds and supports this entire system. You could just think about it for a while. A bank really does not own a single penny of the money that's in the bank. It's really in there in somebody's name or whatever that's belonging to them. But because of the way laws are written, they can claim to be ownerships of billions and trillions of dollars, all of which comes from somebody who has access to the money to put in the bank. And we could go on and on from there. Remember, without taxes, the government would have no money. So the only things that are free in our economy are what? Business owners and government. And the rest of the people are working to support that whole system. Okay? Now, I use that as an analogy, and you could kind of think about it, but if we went back to slavery, actually that same system existed, didn't it? Think about it for a while. We had plantation owners, we had plantation managers, and what else did we have? Slaves. So what we have come up with here is a system that has implemented, okay, in a more general sense, that same operation. Remember that the laws and so forth that are written by the government do what? They determine our lives and our lifestyle. But we as a people on an individual basis simply don't have enough money to buy the election of people to office, people with enough money to do that, business only. All right? Anyway, that was kind of the thing I thought about. Out of my background is about 20 years as an income tax professional, about 10 years or so as an investment advisor, focusing on people who worked, et cetera, on how to create investments, and also a lot of work with creating investment clubs and so forth, and always recognizing that in this country and this economy, the people who move this thing are the business owners. So I talk to people about business ownership. The way to become a part of the free part of this free enterprise system is to own a business. And I like to distinguish that from loaning a business. When one goes to all of the challenges and paperwork and all that kind of thing to create a business, they're really operating on laws written by the government, which is managed by business owners for the most part. If you think about that for a while. We're seeing some of that go on now. Where's the money coming to support people who are running for office and so forth? Not enough comes from the individual to actually swing that. But in any case, my conclusion is that business ownership, not business loanership, because when you use a whole excess amount of money to own a business, you really have it on loan, because what you own is the debt. The people who loan the money to you are the ones who really own the business. All right? They own the business, you own the debt. It applies even in the area of franchising. Remember that you own the franchise, but not the business itself. Okay? And in general, it takes quite a while, if ever. In fact, as long as it is in a major franchise kind of arrangement, you also, what, have no, you don't have ownership at that point. It gives you the freedom to operate that business and so forth. But the fact is that you don't really own it. So after many years of going through that kind of thing, I started focusing on how individuals in this country could actually become business owners, because that's where the result comes from. And that leads me to a paper that I wrote back in, it was in December 31st, 2008, and I call it the Bootstrap Economic Development Plan. We're spending considerable amount of time trying to break put on us as individuals. And when we look at that structure I talked about and look where we are in that structure as to the owner, the manager, and the, we call them people or what? Back in the day, we called them slaves. Now we call them citizens. And when you look at that structure, how does one come out of one situation into the other? If, in fact, your business, when you get it off the ground, you are carrying debt. In fact, all you have to do is what we call, I have a definition for what we call small business. And basically that definition says small business is large debt. And when one does an analysis basically on a business, the way it is structured and the way people talk about it is that are they really ever out of debt? With inventory, facilities, what they call taxes and so forth, are they really ever out of debt? So now when we come to looking for an example, and remember when you are in that position, that makes you kind of the pawn of the system. And if you own that kind of system, you would be at the same position where those people are. Would you be willing to give up your freedom, ownership, for the benefit of the people who are providing that freedom for you? And that's the situation we find ourselves in now. We find ourselves in a situation where every penny we make plus every penny we borrow, all right, winds up going into the system, creating income for the free business owner. But we could also say that it creates jobs for us. But when we look at that system, we need to get to a point where we recognize the significance of business ownership. So what I suggest as a people here in this country, we're talking now as, say, African Americans and so forth in this country, doing somewhere on the order of $1.5 trillion in terms of the income that comes into them. And it doesn't take you very long to realize that how much control that money is having. But it also, I believe, matches, I saw somewhere that was the equivalent of the revenue of the ninth largest country in the world. Now, were we to be the real managers of our own?
Are you here, Mr. Fuller?
Yes, sir.
I thought you had dropped off. That's why I was concerned. But I'm listening, sir. Go ahead. You went silent for a bit, but go ahead.
Okay. So what I'm saying is that a solution in the Bootstrap Economic Development Plan paper that I wrote, it suggested that as a people, were we to be able to adjust our minds and our hearts and our spirit to the point that we would turn around and start doing business with each other and among each other, we could have a serious impact on this economy. Outside of that, I see no way, because to a large extent, I see us doing what? Asking somebody to do what we wouldn't do if we were in control. That just happened. That's just kind of a human trend. So,
you know, I ask you a question? Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Because
yes,
what you're saying is so, so very relevant. I'm taking notes here, and the idea is that $1.5 trillion, that's our GNP, our gross national spending power?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay.
That's our.
And so none of that's recycling in our community, and in other people's community, our dollars are recycling there. What do you think is the problem with the us as a people collaborating? Is there some hindrance that's causing that to not ever come together? Because it's been a long time. Go ahead.
Yes. The hindrance and the thing that is preventing it is the system that is managing our lives. All right? We are trained to think. And all you really have to do is just take a quick look at us as a people. We are literally afraid of each other. And we totally do not trust each other. And to a large extent, we totally won't do business with each other. All right? Look around you in terms of what our impact is in a business economic area. And you could find practically no representative business owned to any large extent. In fact, you're usually surprised when you find out that an African American has some kind of stake in a major business or corporation. They have a lot of what's called small businesses, but small business is large debt, right? You've gone and borrowed in order to get that off the ground, right? And you wind up, operating costs and all those kind of things and the expenses and so forth. And you pretty much have to operate on loans to keep that kind of business going. And one of the reasons that you don't get much further than that is because of our distrust and dislike, which comes from the system. Whenever you see an African-American who comes up in some situation that deals with the law and so forth, they show a mugshot TV, and you'll see. They don't show a picture of that person who's maybe dressed and doing whatever. They show a mugshot from some previous kind of situation. And
let me say
all
something on that point. Let me say something on that point, sir, because I remember that Tiger Woods was in a situation wasn't criminal.
I was about to use that exact example. Every picture of him, you've seen Tiger Woods is a good-looking young man, and he's a multimillionaire. So he dresses well. But what they did is every time you saw it, and even when this whole thing was settled, after they showed him the way he was just this past time, they flipped up a mugshot of him on camera. He just recently golfed last week and did quite well. People were really talking about how well he was doing. Do you realize that during some of those broadcasts, they flipped up a mugshot of him? That does, it makes us not dislike, but makes us kind of distrust them and also puts a negative in our minds and our hearts. And it takes a bear to overcome that kind of thought. Okay,
that
I
is
know.
Deep
I run a business. Right, I run a business, and I've had it. I talked to someone today, and they said, well, do you make a profit? Well, if you're running a business, I mean, would somebody ask you whether you made a profit? If you didn't make a profit, you would not be in business after a while, would you?
No, you wouldn't if you didn't.
The implication of that is somehow, wait a minute, I have to be kind of careful that I'm going to do business with you. Now, I put my profit in the businesses out in other arenas, right? I have no choice, but anybody you do business with makes what might be called a profit. So you ask me.
I'd like to ask you a question historically, because you're much you've seen a lot of some of the really past growth and development. So what do you think about, say, we had black banks before in the past? Do you remember any of the black banks that really had their foot in the business world? And what happened to them if at all that they were there?
Yes, because when you're operating a bank or something like that, you actually have to be in the business community, because they are the ones who really need the money, that you've come to. But what we see in those kind of situations, right now, for the last 20 years or so, I have been promoting Unity Bank here in Houston. And okay. The responses I get from people are just totally heartbreaking. Because
I don't know about Unity Bank.
Every single one of us in this city ought to have some kind of account at Unity Bank.
So what is Unity Bank? Explain, because that's the first time I've heard of it.
Bank is an African-American owned, or at least in time, it's one of only two, I guess I only know of two in the country, African-American owned. I did dealt with a bank like that in the city of Washington, D.C., but at that point, there was only one office, okay, and one branch. And the reason why is because the people, like the people who owned it, would not use that bank.
Wow.
All right?
Now, this is interesting. So in Texas, this bank is in Texas right now?
Yeah, in Texas. I don't know. I think I heard there might be one. But look at the city of Houston. One bank? Come on, look at the population of Houston made up of us as a people, and there's just one bank that is scarcely making, it. The same thing applies to businesses.
Yes.
Look at the businesses around. You have no big, major moving business owned by African Americans.
Now, we had BET at one point.
So what
and then we had BET at one point, and we had, you know, that was like an iconic business. But Johnson, yeah, sold out.
Well, that wasn't here in this city. But you know why they went to where they did?
Tell me, please.
If you're an African American, you own a business. Who would be your customer?
I would think the black community. That's what I would put folks on.
What other ethnic group would do business with you?
I don't think any of that point, because it seems like they're isolated.
Right. They have no reason to. They have no reason to, because they own all those things in their own culture. They're not coming across town to do business with you. If we don't do business with our businesses, what happens to them?
They go
Black
away.
Black Enterprise has a problem because we don't have people who really own businesses so they can run the ads in there.
Mm.
Okay?
Wow. Yes.
And the reason why... I tell you what, if people had a chance, if you were to go out there and look at Third Ward, my eyes tear when I ride on what used to be Dowling. I think it's Emancipation now. I remember that everything from Southmore all the way up into town were businesses owned by African Americans. Okay? Now, the whole area is now falling apart because what? Why would other people come spend their money in that particular community?
I have a question for you.
Sure.
I have a question. What about the black churches and all the money that comes in the black churches? I mean, that's a lot of money that comes in the church.
Exactly.
Why don't they put money into the black?
But I mean, you could spread that. You wouldn't just talk about churches. Black businesses could be running themselves through the bank, couldn't they, instead of other banks? But the only way they could do that is if the population deposited enough money there for them to run it.
Wow.
You follow me? If we don't put any money in the bank, when somebody comes along and needs $500,000, if we didn't put the money
in
there. Yeah.
This is deep, because what about our athletes? We got athletes with all this money, and it's time for unity in the black community. I can see what you're saying in a very, very deep way. I know that there's, like, black people in wealth, and athletes as one example, okay? They have all this wealth that they really don't ever get a chance to really invest. They have people that are investing for them, typically their agents, okay? Now, we have to somehow get those who have the dollars to take a different perspective of how they are investing their dollars outside of the community in which they come from, because it's, we're like grapes on a grapevine, and we're not getting any nutrients or water, and we're dying. That's the reality.
Yes, but now remember that is someone who makes $1 million more obligated than someone who makes $100,000 or $10,000?
I think the unity across the board.
What I'm saying is the reason why we are not is because it is not a culture that we create. That culture applies all the way from someone who makes $10,000 to somebody who makes a few million. Now, when you're making a few million, where in our community would you find a business to do business with? You won't. As far as I know, there is only one automobile dealership, city of Houston, owned by an African-American, as far as I know. Only one. All right? Now, we buy more cars than one dealership could
okay,
offer.
Okay, yes. That's a good
is
point.
That right?
Good point.
So,
yeah, you're right. Absolutely
and
right.
So what 10 people, right, at $100,000 apiece is a million, isn't it? Something like that.
Yes, true. That's no, you're
right.
True. You're true.
But if I took my $50,000 and ran it through a bank, right, and there were a whole bunch of other people who ran their $50,000 through a bank, then an auto dealer person could go to that bank now to borrow money to run a business. So obligation applies to everybody. And the same applies. It would be really wild if the businesses that were in business, if they would run their business through an African American bank,
right? I mean, the banks
are
all
in business, right? If you know anybody in business, you're running a restaurant, you're running a barber shop, you're running what are the kind of businesses? There's some franchises,
cleaners,
right?
Restaurant cleaners.
Well, I don't know. I'm looking for somebody who can tell me where there is an African American owned dry cleaners. Do you know where that one is? Owned?
Well, see, I'm new in Texas and I have not seen that.
No.
I saw.
That's
no,
what I'm
I saw.
Saying. Why?
Yes.
Why? Because we are not their customers. If we were their customers, they'd be here. We take our money and our things to what? Somebody else, and we actually have been programmed to think that they can do a better job than us, except that we're the ones working behind the wall in there doing the work.
You're absolutely right.
So
that point is very valid.
It's that mindset that's set in our minds that we are less than human in terms of that definition. We really don't, and we don't believe that we have the qualities and capabilities to manage. And
no,
I was talking
sir,
about Dowling. Let me talk about Dowling. Those businesses closed because who else is going to go over there on Dowling? Or not Dowling, but Emancipation. Now,
Emancipation,
if somebody gonna come from across town, wait a minute. Is somebody going to come from across town in order to go into a restaurant on Dowling owned by an African American? No. The people in the community should make that.
So the turnoff is yes, sir. I'm going to say to you, I'm sorry for the intruding there. The turnoff is our environments that are in our communities that are not attracting our own people in those areas. So, for example, you know, if we had like
It is the programming. It is the programming of our mind by the system.
So we're still slaves, and that's what you're saying, sir. We're just still
it's
slaves.
Programming and education, et cetera. We live on this kind of thing that somehow things are better. I was riding along today and thinking about it. And let's say I was riding from here. Let's say I was riding from here to, to the University of Houston.
Okay, TCU.
Now,
okay.
Now, what would be the difference in the functionality if I drove over there in my 1995 Cadillac or if I drove over there in a 2017 Rolls Royce? What would my purpose be? What would the function be? And
marketing.
Wait a minute now. Would I arrive there
in some kind of difference? In other words, if we took off at the same time, how far difference would it distance when we get there and we walk into the building to do something? What's the difference between my driving my 1995 Cadillac and your driving
your point
a brand new Mercedes Benz? It's a psychological thing. We are over.
Your point is well.
What it does is teaches us to override. We spend too much money to get some form of prestige. And this is one of my mantras. Very simple.
Yes,
prestige
sir. Yes,
is
sir.
The most expensive item in the marketplace.
Wow.
I could go out and buy a suit for $150 or something like that, and wear it. And you could go out and spend $800. We both have suits. And in fact, when they are new, okay?
So I know what you're saying, sir.
Psychologically trained that somehow because it's done by others, we'll go to a Chinese restaurant or they live on us, don't they?
Yes, that's right.
Huh?
That's
live
right.
on us. A Hispanic restaurant lives on us, doesn't it? Why?
Wow.
Because
yes,
we don't have any. Because we don't have any because we don't do business with our own.
We have a lot of homes that do good cooking now. I know that's a fact in the black community, all right? There's a lot of good cooking that be going on.
A lot of good cooking. But we spend our time at lunchtime, we don't go to an African American owned business.
Wow. Wow. This is man.
That we go to is not owned by them. Even in the franchise kind of environment. So my
point is,
we create that. I've talked to a few people and told them that what is it, the Houston Defender, or the local newspaper. Every one of us in this city will send them $50 a year, so that they could mail a copy to us, so that they could afford to what they'd have enough people that they would attract ads from businesses. You follow me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, if everyone, and whether we read the paper or not, $50 wouldn't change our life negatively. It would actually
we throw that away on lunches in the daytime. $5 here, $5 here, a week. That's like that's 25. Yes, sir.
Yeah, but not in one of our own, not a restaurant owned by us. I just asked you that. Can you name me? I mean, in this city, or people listening to me. Tell me where there's an African-American owned. I know one dry cleaners that's owned.
Okay.
I talked to the lady I made them.
Okay. I saw one restaurant on Emancipation. Let me tell you about this. So there's one restaurant on Emancipation across from the Recreation Center there, okay? And, I was talking to I didn't know it was the owner. I was actually, they didn't even have a phone number on the window outside, right, like normal businesses do, a phone number or something on the marquee. And I was talking to them about it and asking questions. I was like asking, you know, he treated me like dirt, okay? And I was talking about some idea that we, you know, have an event. Block the streets off, break some businesses away. He said, "Well, I make $6,000. I think it was $6,000." So he talked about it was weird though because I didn't see that kind of capacity and the attitude. I wouldn't spend it there. That's what turned me off. The attitude was like arrogant, relations driven. You know,
I know the restaurant you're talking about, and I would take a completely different attitude with that because remember. That dude is disrespected by us as a people totally. And part
so that's
of the reason
his anger
and
disposition. Got it. Yes, sir.
Now, remember, what? Customers?
Yes.
Right? That
yes.
place ought to be overwhelmed, and it should be such that it looks like other ones. Right there where the place where we work with, do you know that at one point the Shape Center restaurant, was open 6 days a week, all day long. I went by just today, and there was not a single person, not a single customer in that restaurant. Okay, and I was over there for 2 hours. Not one person came in and did some business at that restaurant. Now,
wow.
you could talk about what you want to, but how could they possibly remodel the building if no income comes in there? And how could treat? Okay, so it is our total responsibility to somehow find a way to overcome the psychological training. Now, if you think that the other people in the community are going to encourage you to spend your money in an African-American restaurant, I think you're way off. They want that money.
I believe you're right. We might be put us in a crazy institute or you know, like that, because that's definitely illogical, you know?
And what I'm talking about is what businesses themselves, the restaurants themselves, they literally have to go, or they don't have to, but because of the way this is structured, they almost have to go to one of those banks, don't they?
Yes.
They almost have to go. Why? Because the other banks don't have enough business to manage what they're dealing with. They don't even have enough people working there. And why don't they have enough? Because we don't put our money there.
Well, let me ask you a question. What about our students? I'm sorry, I just thought about this. So I'm sorry for cutting you. What about the college students we have that are going to these universities to learning all this high, technical skills and financing and investments and, you know, and building and engineering stuff? What happens there?
Oh, very simple. When they get that kind of education and so forth, they've got to go somewhere where there's a job. And since we don't create it in our community, they have to go to the places where they work so that loyalty comes toward those existing. I tell you what, you mentioned to the one at some point in time, says, why don't you do your banking through Unity Bank?
Yes.
And they would think you were crazy.
See, now that I know about Unity Bank, I'm gonna get closer on this one because
I have been promoting that for several years. I talk to people about it and they said, they use other terms, but that's African American owned. Why don't they get bigger? Now how could they get bigger if you don't support them? Or the kind of thing I want to get done, they are not big enough to handle. And the reason they are not is because you won't even go with just a little savings account.
Well, yeah, but the bank could handle any. They got computers, and computers are systematically functional.
And if they don't have enough money, I bet you they have contracts or contacts with other major banks that they could still make the transaction through them. Okay?
Yes, you're right.
Everything we need done could be done through that bank, but they can't unless they have customers. And we are not their customers.
I want to say this, because tomorrow I'm going to make an effort to contact Unity Bank. Now, what I also like to do, Ms. Fuller, is I like to talk to you offline about some of the things that I see as possibilities, all right? Because I didn't know the depth of what Unity Bank and what I'm hearing and from you is like really, it's hurting and it's encouraging.
There are three or four African-American newspapers. We ought to invest $50 a year or $55 or $60 a year in those things. If they were getting that kind of money, they could afford to get big companies to advertise with them, and they could grow to be productive. Right now, those African-American-owned businesses, they have to give their papers away.
You know what, sir? This is embarrassing in the 21st century.
You went to Shape Center. Every newspaper you saw in there, was free?
Yes.
Newspapers can't be made free.
Right.
You realize they're scratching like everything. They're scratching like hell trying to have enough money to print those papers because they don't have any money coming in.
So this is a real operation here.
In fact, I wonder how they managed to make it, right? And that's because we will not support our own. We come up with excuses. And you talked about churches. But that applies to businesses. Even the ones who own the small businesses and so forth, they do not have an account. See, Unity Bank ought to have 30 branches all around the city of Houston, right?
Wow.
It ought to be 30 branches, just like there are, what, 50 or 60 or 100 branches of Chase or whatever those other, right?
Yes. Look, satellites, look, satellites.
When you figure the percentage of population we are, I have a theory, and I like to talk about it. Our percentage in every area of business ownership ought to match our percentage of the population.
I like that formula.
If we're
15%
of the population, 15% of the restaurants in this city ought to be owned by us and supported by us. 15% of the banks in this city, 15% of them should be owned by us and supported by us. 15% of the auto dealerships in this city ought to be run by us, right, and supported by us spending our money. If you were to turn around and go to that one dealership down there and took all of our shopping to that one place, guess what?
Yeah.
They'd have to open 5 other branches just to support us. 10.
I do understand the logic. I understand the logic.
And it's not them. It's our minds, which have been programmed. Follow me? It's our minds
that's
been programmed. Now,
yes, sir.
I'm going to end this. I'm going to talk to this about one thing. I now have a program in place where every person who wants to own a business can own a business. And by own, I mean own. I don't mean loan.
Gotcha.
I can set somebody up with a major business operating at 100 countries and territories around the world for $36 registration with no monthly fee on the side.
That's
so every individual can now own and operate their own business, and in fact, they can buy most of what they buy through their own business. All right? That's what I'm talking about, is that when we do that now with the advent of internet and most people who recognize that marketing is only a few years away from being totally internet-based. Am I right?
Absolutely right. Everything is getting there.
Okay. Who's going to get up and drive across town to three places when you can sit at the traffic light and place an order from your cell phone?
Exactly.
Huh?
No, the point is,
and listen, or you can sit up and, you know, sit up while you're looking at the news in the afternoon, place an order. And if you do it before 10 o'clock in the morning, within 3 years, it'll be on your doorstep before sundown.
Yes, I do understand.
Right now, it's the next day.
Listen, sir, I want to say this because I have another blog I got to get on here came this afternoon. But I want to. This is a follow up conversation for you and I. I want to tell you, sir, you have made a big, profound impact here. I want you to know that, sir. And my ears and eyes are open. I know that the audience will be as well. So what I'm going to do is market what we're doing, and I want to, you know, just kind of let you wind down your conversation, and then we'll wind down my conversation with this.
For a registration to own and operate your own business, you would represent a couple of three companies that would offer you their services at a discount, AT&T, Sprint, and T-Mobile. If you're with AT&T and you register to own that business, AT&T will assume that you are just like major corporations, and they'll discount your phone service for you and your wife 19% a month. So you could make a profit with the registration.
I like what you just said there. I'm going to talk to you more about this. This is deep, sir. So, Mr. Fuller, I want to say I really appreciate you and what you're sharing, the experience and the emotion and the reality and the serious talk that you're saying, sir. So it's much appreciated. And you done put me on fire, so I need to get on to this.
We can do it. But then we have to develop the mindset that allows us to do it. Stop hating each other. Stop distressing each other. And be in a position to do referrals so that we could refer business to each other. And what I suggest, you do business with yourself. What you're being taught now about business and business ownership no longer applies in this internet-based marketing shopping environment. What used to be no longer applies.
in this kind of environment.
The brick and mortar. I understand, sir.
Brick and mortar. Now, Amazon cover is showing that, by the way, it is growing and developing. Why? Because, hey, you just as soon spend that 2 hours maybe with your family. We could even have a serious impact on family if instead of spending 3 hours going to the shopping center, you spent that 3 hours with your kids, we could get to what you were talking about. We could actually wind up being parents again. Now, I don't think we will, but we would have
the
time
to take the hot. We will, sir. We got to do it. It's no choice. We have to do something right now. We're sinking and drowning. So, in any event, let me disconnect here. So, I want to say to the audience listening, take care. Talk to you soon, Ms. Fuller. Audience, this is Haleem Mustafa, Haleem the Dream Builder, with Life Success Radio. And we just had an interview, a discussion, a presentation from Mr. Art Fuller. Very intellectual, who understands this environment here in Texas quite well. So I'm not a native Texan. I'm kind of from California, transplanted here. But he has surely opened my eyes to the reality that Texas has disappeared on the map for black people in business. I mean, we have what I'm hearing. So we've got a job to do, and I'm hoping that in the future that we'll have this conversation and continue to do some work with it, not just talk about it, because it's time to change. So I'll be signing off here at Life Success Radio, and we will talk to you soon. And we have a new sponsor. No longer will we be sponsored by Booker T. Washington Speaks, Reality Books, publisher of Dr. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. So we really appreciate that launch. But now it's time for the serious work that Life Success Radio has to do in our mission. So until next time, you continue to not give up on the hope in knowing that it's our time to rise and shine. So until next time, I say to you in the greetings of peace and blessings, assalamu alaikum. Thank you very much.
All right, Doc.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs. That's $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006.
This is the author of the book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, reading from my book, from Chapter 5, entitled Education for Living. Booker T. Washington presented a very viable program for the African Americans' development as a nation within a nation. A nation within a nation. He commented in an address presented during his tenure as president of the Tuskegee Normal and Industrial Institute that the educational leader must understand and appreciate the necessity for the races learning the difference between being worked as in slavery and doing for self. Booker T. Washington continued by explaining that the wise leader would not confine the Negro to industrial life, but believes that the very best service which anyone can render to what is called the higher education is to teach the present generation to work and save. This will create the wealth from which alone can come leisure and the opportunity for higher education. One of the most fundamental and far-reaching deeds that has been accomplished during the last quarter of a century has been that by which the Negro has been helped to find himself, to reacquire the knowledge of self, and to learn the secrets of civilization, to learn that there are a few simple cardinal principles upon which a race must start its upward course unless it would fail and its last estate be worse than its first. It has been necessary for the Negro to learn the difference from being worked and working, to learn that being worked meant degradation while working for self means civilization, and that all forms of labor are honorable and all forms of idleness disgraceful. It has been necessary for him to learn and for her to learn that all races that have gotten upon their feet have done so largely by lean and economic foundation and in general by beginning in a proper understanding of the need for civilization and ownership of the soil. Booker T. Washington said that 40 years ago, he's speaking back in the early 1900s, 40 years ago, my race emerged from slavery into freedom. If in too many cases the Negro race began development at the wrong end, it was largely because neither white nor black properly understood the case. Nor is it any wonder that this is so, for never before in the history of the world had such a problem been presented as that of the two races at the coming of freedom in this country. He said that for 250 years, I believe the way for the redemption of the Negro was being prepared through industrial development. Through all those years, the Southern white man did business with the Negro in a way that no one else has done business with him. In most cases, if a Southern white man wanted a house built, he consulted a Negro mechanic or engineer about the plan, or architect about the plan and about the actual building of the structure. If he wanted a suit of clothes made, he went to a Negro tailor, and for shoes, he went to a shoemaker of the same race. In a certain way, every slave plantation in the South was an industrial school. On these plantations, young colored men and women were constantly being trained not only as farmers, but as carpenters, blacksmiths, wheelwrights, brick masons, engineers, cooks, laundresses, sewing women, and housekeepers. Booker T. Washington continues saying, I do not mean in any way to apologize for the curse of slavery, which was a curse to both races, but in what I say about industrial training in slavery, I am simply stating facts. This training was crude and was given for selfish purposes, It did not answer the highest ends because there was an absence of mental training in connection with the training of the hands. To a large degree, though, this business contact with the southern white man and the industrial training on the plantations left the Negro at the close of the war in possession of nearly all the common and skilled labor in the South. The industries that gave the South its power, prominence, and wealth prior to the Civil War, were mainly the raising of cotton, sugar cane, rice, and tobacco. Before the way could be prepared for the proper growing and marketing of these crops, forests had to be cleared, houses had to be built, public roads and railroads constructed. In all these works, the Negro did most of the heavy work. In the planting, cultivating, and marketing of the crops, not only was the Negro the chief dependence, but in the manufacture of tobacco, he became a skilled and proficient workman. And in this, up to the present time in the South, he holds the lead in the large tobacco factories. In most of the industries, though, what happened? For nearly 20 years after the Civil War, except in a few instances, the value of the industrial training given by the plantations was overlooked. Negro men and women were educated in literature, in mathematics, and in the sciences, with little thought of what had been taking place during the preceding 250 years, except perhaps as something to be escaped, to be gotten away from as far as possible. As a generation began to pass, those who had been trained as mechanics and architects and engineers in slavery began to disappear by death, and gradually it began to be realized that there were few to take their places. There were young men educated in foreign tongues, in Greek and Latin and French, but few in carpentry or in mechanical or architectural drawing. Many were trained in Latin, but few as engineers and blacksmiths. Too many were taken from the farm and educated, but they were educated in everything but farming. For this reason, they had no interest in farming, and they did not return to it. And yet 85% of the Negro population of the southern states, at that time anyway, lived, and for a considerable time, Booker T. Washington expected that they would continue to live in the country districts. And he continues, "The charge is often brought against the members of my race, and too often justly, I confess, that they are found leaving the country districts and flocking into the great cities where temptations are more frequent and harder to resist, where the Negro people too often become demoralized. Think, though, how frequently it is the case that from the first day that a pupil begins to go to school, his books teach him much about the cities of the world and city life, and almost nothing about the country. How natural it is, then, that when he has the ordering of his life, he wants to live it in the city." And then Booker T. Washington continues, "Only a short time before his death, the late Mr. Collis P. Huntington, to whose memory a magnificent library had just recently been given by his widow to the Hampton Institute in Virginia, said in a public address some words which seemed to me so wise that I want to quote them here." And this is a quotation from the late Collis P. Huntington, the railroad magnate. "Our schools teach everyone a little of almost everything, but in my opinion they teach very few children just what they ought to know in order to make their way successfully in life. They do not put into the hands of the children the tools that they are best fitted to use, and hence so many failures. Many a mother and sister have worked and slaved, living upon scanty food, in order to give a son and brother a liberal education, and in doing this have built up a barrier between the boy and the work he was fitted to do. Let me say to you that all honest work is honorable work. If the labor is manual and seems common, you will have all the more chance to be thinking of other things or of work that is higher and brings better pay, and to work out in your minds better and higher duties and responsibilities for yourselves and for thinking of ways by which you can help others as well as yourselves bring them up to your own higher level." Unquote. Booker T. Washington also recalled that, quote, some years ago when we decided to make tailoring a part of our training at the Tuskegee Institute, I was amazed to find that it was almost impossible to find in the whole country an educated colored man who could teach the making of clothing. We could find numbers of them who could teach astronomy, theology, Latin, or grammar, but almost none who could instruct in the making of clothing, something that has to be used by every one of us every day in the year. How often have I been discouraged as I have gone through the South and into the homes of the people of my race and have found women who could converse intelligently upon abstruse subjects and yet could not tell how to improve the condition of the poorly cooked and still more poorly served bread and meat which they and their families were eating three times a day. It is discouraging to find a girl who can tell you the geographical location of any country on the globe and who does not know where to place the dishes upon a common dinner table. It is discouraging to find a woman who knows much about theoretical chemistry and who cannot properly wash and iron a shirt. In what I say here, I would not by any means have it understood that I would limit or circumscribe the mental development of the Negro student. But no race can be lifted until its mind is awakened and strengthened. By the side of industrial training should always go mental and moral training, but the pushing of mere abstract knowledge into the head means little. Our knowledge must be harnessed to the things of real life. Our knowledge must be harnessed to the things of real life. I would encourage the Negro to secure all the mental strength, all the mental culture, whether gleaned from studying science, mathematics, history, language, or literature, that his circumstances will allow. But I believe most earnestly that for years to come, the education of the people of my race should be so directed that the greatest proportion of the mental strength of the masses will be brought to bear upon the everyday practical things of life, upon something that is needed to be done, and something which they will be permitted to do in the community where they reside. And just the same with the professional class which the race needs and must have, I would say give the men and women of that class, too, the training which will best fit them to perform in the most successful manner the service which the race demands. I would not confine the Negro race to industrial life, not even to agriculture, for example, although I believe that by far the greater part of the Negro race is best off in the country districts and must and should continue to live there. But I would teach the race that in industry the foundation must be laid, that the very best service which anyone can render to what is called the higher education is to teach the present generation to provide a material or industrial foundation. On such a foundation as this will grow habits of thrift, a love of work, economy, ownership of property, and bank accounts. And out of it, in the future, will grow practical education, professional education, positions of public responsibility, and out of it will grow moral and religious strength. Out of it will grow wealth, from which alone can come leisure and the opportunity for the enjoyment of literature and the fine arts. In the words of the late beloved Frederick Douglass, quote, every blow of the sledgehammer wielded by a black arm or brown arm is a powerful blow in the support of our cause. Every colored mechanic is by virtue of circumstances an elevator of his race. Every house built by a black man is a strong tower against the allied hosts of prejudice. It is impossible for us to attach too much importance to this aspect of the subject. Without industrial development, there can be no wealth, and without wealth, there can be no leisure. Without leisure, no opportunity for thoughtful reflection and the cultivation of the higher arts, unquote. Booker T. Washington repeatedly reminded his questioners, saying, I would set no limits to the attainments of the Negro in arts, in letters, or statesmanship, but I believe the surest way to reach those ends is by laying the foundation in the little things of life and that lie immediately about one's door. I believe the surest way to reach those goals is by laying the foundation in the little things of life that lie immediately about one's door. I plead for industrial education and industrial development, the building of industries, factories, farms, service occupations for the Negro, not because I want to cramp him, but because I want to free him. I want to see him enter the all-powerful business and commercial worlds. It was such combined mental, moral, and industrial education which gave the late General Samuel Chapman Armstrong, the founder of the Hampton University, which the late Samuel Chapman Armstrong set out to give at the Hampton Institute when he established that school 30 years ago. And this is, again, Booker T. Washington speaking in the early 1900s, or late 1800s. The Hampton Institute has continued along the lines laid down by its great founder, and now each year an increasing number of similar schools are being established in the South for the people of both races. Early in the history of the Tuskegee Institute, we began to combine industrial training with mental and moral culture. Our first efforts were in the direction of agriculture, and we began teaching this with no appliances except one hoe and a blind mule. From this small beginning, we have grown until now the Institute owns 2,000 acres of land, 800 of which are cultivated each year by the young men of the school. We began teaching wheelwrighting and blacksmithing in a small way to the men, and laundry work, cooking and sewing, and housekeeping to the young women. The 1,400 and over young men and women who attended the school during the last school year received instruction, in addition to academic and religious training, in 33 trades and industries, including carpentry, blacksmithing, printing, wheelwriting, harnessing, painting, machinery, founding, shoemaking, brick masonry and brick making, plastering, sawmilling, tinsmithing, tailoring, mechanical and architectural drawing, electrical and steam engineering, or automotive engineering, canning, sewing, dressmaking, millinery, hat making, cooking, laundering, housekeeping, mattress making, basketry, nursing, agriculture, dairying, and stock raising, as well as horticulture. Not only do the students receive instruction in these trades, but they do actual work, by means of which more than half of them pay some part or all of their expenses while remaining at the school. Of the 60 buildings belonging to the school, all but four were almost wholly erected by the students as part of their industrial education. Even the bricks which go into the walls are made by students in the school's brickyard, in which last year they manufactured 2 million bricks. When we first began this work at Tuskegee and the idea got spread among the people of my race that the students who came to the Tuskegee school were to be taught industries in connection with their academic studies, were, in other words, to be taught to work, I received a great many verbal messages and letters from parents informing me that they wanted their children taught books, but not how to work. This protest went on for 3 or 4 years, but I am glad to be able to say now that our people have very generally been educated to a point where they see their own needs and conditions so clearly that it has been several years since we have had a single protest from parents against the teaching of industries, and now there is a positive enthusiasm for it. In fact, public sentiment among the students at Tuskegee is now so strong for industrial training that it would hardly permit a student to remain on the grounds who was unwilling to labor. It seems to me that too often mere book education leaves the Negro young man or woman in a weak position. For example, I have seen a Negro girl taught by her mother to help her in doing laundry work at home. Later, when this same girl was graduated from the public schools or a high school and returned home, she finds herself educated out of sympathy with laundry work, and yet she is not able to find anything to do which seems in keeping with the cost and character of her education. Under these circumstances, we cannot be surprised if she does not fulfill the expectations made for her. What should have been done for her, it seems to me, was to give her, along with her academic education, thorough training in the latest and best methods of laundry work, so that she could have put so much skill and intelligence into it that the work would have been lifted out from the plane of drudgery. The home which she would then have been able to found by the results of her work would have enabled her to help her children to take a still more responsible position in life. Almost from the first, Tuskegee has kept in mind, and I think this should be the policy of all industrial schools, fitting students for occupations which would be open to them in their home communities. Some years ago, we noted the fact that there was beginning to be a demand in the South for men to operate dairies in a skillful modern manner. We opened a dairy department in connection with the school where a number of young men could have instruction in the latest and most scientific methods of dairy work. At present, we have calls mainly from southern white men for twice as many dairymen as we are able to supply. What is equally satisfactory, the reports which come to us indicate that our young men are giving the highest satisfaction and are fast changing and improving the dairy product in the communities into which they go. I use the dairy here as an example. What I've said of this is equally true of many other industries which we teach. Aside from the economic value of this work, I cannot but believe, and my observation confirms me in my belief, that as we continue to place Negro men and women of intelligence, religion, modesty, conscience, and skill in every community in the South, who will prove by actual results their value to the community, I cannot but believe, I say, that this will constitute a solution to many of the present political and social difficulties. Many seem to think that industrial education is meant to make the Negro work as he worked in the days of slavery. This is far from my conception of industrial education. If this training is worth anything to the Negro, it consists of in teaching him how not to work, but how to make the forces of nature, air and steam and water and horsepower and electricity work for him. If it has any value, it is in lifting labor out of the toil and drudgery into that beautiful and dignified plane of excellence. The Negro in the South works, and he works hard, and she works hard, but too often his or her ignorance and lack of skill causes him or her to do their work in the most costly and shiftless manner, and this keeps them near the bottom of the ladder in the economic world. I have not emphasized particularly in these pages the great need of training the Negro in agriculture, but I believe that this branch of industrial education does need very great emphasis. We're going to stop right there. We're going to end our reading of my book for now, and we'll resume at another time. But we certainly want to encourage you to stay tuned and listen to our commercial for the book so you can find out, again, how to order the book to put it in your library. Thank you very much. This is Marshall Washington Cabinets, the author of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, also founding owner of Reality Books Publications.